Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with. In this conversation with a reluctant therapist, what's on your mind today, Elizabeth?
Hey, Bree. Well, today we have a full hour of conversation planned. I have a guest in the studio. I'm looking forward to our conversation. We're going to talk about raising kids and being married and keeping it all together, which is a topic that I'm incredibly passionate about. I would say that that is my wheelhouse. But before I'm able to head off in that direction, I'm really feeling the need to talk about and acknowledge and address kind of what's going on right now for everyone in the country, the shooting in Las Vegas. And it's not just the shooting in Las Vegas, because that is actually become the thing that toppled us, it feels like, as a nation, because we're still reeling from this string of natural disasters and the human suffering that's been associated with the devastation in Puerto Rico and in Houston and in Florida. It's just, you know, day after day, we're seeing images of people whose lives have been completely destroyed and disrupted with no end in sight. And so trying to hold all that in our psyches or hold all that in our hearts and reach out as we can, you know, it starts to become too much. All of us have our threshold of stress and trauma that we can carry. And when we breach that threshold, we go into a state of overwhelm or overload, and then it becomes too difficult to focus or listen to or deal with anything else, any new information. And I noticed that in class yesterday with my students that I really couldn't go on with any of the lecturing that I was going to do until we stopped down and talked about all of the emotional overload that they're feeling trying to comprehend just the extent of human suffering that's happening in so many places, and not just in our country, but around the world. It is too much to bear. And I also noticed this morning how deep this sense of overload is, because I ended up at the vet with my cat this morning, had to go in for a checkup, and my vet, who I've known for almost 20 years, and you know, we only see each other over cat crises, but he came in, and I said, good morning. He said, good morning. I said, how are you doing? And he didn't just say, great, like you normally do. He kind of stopped, and he goes, I'm okay. And then, of course, the therapist and me had to say, what's going on? And we spent a half hour just processing. He said, I'm just really struggling. I feel heavy. This shooting in Las Vegas has really hit me hard. And I'm not sure why this has become the thing that's making it really difficult to move forward. And so we spent a half hour kind of sharing our thoughts and feelings about the shooting and what's going on in the country and why we're getting caught up in things about taking a knee and the American flag when we have, you know, seemingly bigger things that we should be concerned about. And I was talking to him and saying, you know, one of the things that always concerns me when we get in a position where we have gun violence or a mass shooting. And isn't it awful that I'm even saying it in these times, every time it happens, as if it now has become just this non-surprising thing that happens in our country, right? We have a mass shooting. But for me, one of the things that I struggle with is that so quickly the conversation when we have a mass shooting lumps gun violence in with mental illness, as if to say the two go hand in hand. And so we can kind of push it off over there and say, well, that's just something that happens when mentally ill people have guns. And I'm sorry, but that's not true. You know, that is an easy fix or an easy way to kind of make sense of something that is senseless. But there is not a direct correlation that only people who are mentally ill pick up a firearm and shoot people. You might get yourself into a state of being deranged or lose your sense of reality or be delusional when you're in the state that you would pick up a gun and fire at people. But to say that only someone mentally ill would pick up a gun and fire it, one, it lumps people who struggle with anxiety and depression and OCD and the common human struggles that we all have into this case of someone who has a psychotic break and picks up a gun and shoots people. Mental illness is not just a catch-all place for every time someone struggles. You know, true mental illness, psychotic, chronic mental illness, doesn't necessarily lend itself to violence either. People who have chronic, severe psychotic mental illness are not inherently violent people. So, although we're not going to make the show about this and about the shooting today, I want us to try to separate out gun violence and mental illness and keep them separate. Because if we don't, then we miss the opportunity to talk about what else could be driving gun violence in our society. Could it be just this inherent tone of violence that drives our country through our actions around the world, through our rhetoric, through the way our politicians speak to each other, through the combativeness of our sports, through violent video games, through our media outlets that get into a rampant rage that fuels their listeners to go into states that would become irrational. So if we do want to lump together gun violence with mental illness, and we need to look at our media outlets and their untethered access to many Americans who are hearing these words of violence or anger and riling them up into a state where they would take a gun and go do something violent. So are all of our media outlets contributing to mental illness? Are they the source of mental illness? Are the people spouting these words of angry rhetoric themselves mentally ill and drawing in people who are already predisposed? I don't know. But if we just say someone who shoots people is mentally ill, then we stop having a conversation that can move us in another direction, which might be addressing the tone of our culture, the tone of our civil discourse, the tone of our interactions with each other. So in addressing how we might all be feeling, and I don't know how everyone's feeling, I know how my students are feeling, and I know how my veterinarian is feeling, and I know how my guest today is feeling, and myself, I don't know how all of you are feeling, but I have a sense that we are in a period of stress pileup, where we all have been able to manage stress on some level, but in some way, it's become too much. We've all hit our threshold. We've gone over to the other side. And so I just encourage you to start pulling into yourself for some self-care. Because in times of stress pileup, the only way to kind of get our feet underneath us again, we have to really pull back and start paying attention to what we're eating. Eating well, 5 small meals a day, lots of protein, minimize your sugar, eat good grains and oats. It's amazing that gut-brain connection is very strong. And sometimes when we're stressed or anxious or overwhelmed or sad, we stop eating. And that starts us down a path of trouble. So focus on the 5 small meals. Get sleep as you need it. Exercise more than you usually do. Drink more water than you usually do. Move, move, move. And connect with others. Connect with those in your support group. Because I understand that it's super tempting to want to hibernate or put the blanket over your head or to retreat from the world if you can. But this is not the time to retreat. Because if we all start to retreat in fear, then violence and anger and hate have won. And it'll become more and more difficult to reach out and build our communities back. So talk to each other. Talk to those you love. Talk to strangers. Strike up conversations with people that you don't know so that we can continue to see the humanity in each other. And make sure you're taking time to breathe. The simple act of breathing in and breathing out with no agenda. Just focusing on what it feels like to expand and contract your belly. With just each easy inhalation and moving that oxygen through your body will do more to help clear your head, calm your nervous system, and allow you to problem solve in more effective ways. And finally, do something life-affirming. Because again, in the wake of tragedy, it's easy to get completely overcome with a sense of hopelessness. So take the opportunity to do something life-affirming, something that just is novel, different. You know, go someplace you've never been, watch the sunset, take a moment to refresh your appreciation for something simple. And all of those things you do to self-care will help you regain that inner resilience that you have so that you're able to be there for yourself and for others. And it's a perfect segue in some ways into our conversation today, because as parents, our children are looking to us to know how to react, to know how to respond, to see if they're safe. They may not hear the news or know the news, but they can feel the energy of their adults. They can feel how their parents and their teachers and their neighbors are feeling, and they sense that things aren't okay. And so it's important that we do the self-care and life-affirming things and connect and talk and breathe and model that for our children so that they can in turn develop the resilience they need to face what's going to be their time in the adult world and their time to have to reach out and help and be a part of the community. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. My guest today is Brianne Burkhart, and we're going to talk about the role of parenting and marriage and children in our lives and just how we all are constantly working and striving to do our best and therefore do well by our community. And I also want to take a moment to pay tribute to Tom Petty, who we also lost and whom I loved dearly.
I ain't never gonna let you down. All you gotta do is trust me. I would never make you some clown. Baby, why won't you trust me? You give up so
This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thank you for tuning in today. And you can be part of the conversation in different ways. You can reach us by phone at 805-781-3875 once we open up the phone lines. You can also find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org and find us under the News Talk tab. Bree does a great job of keeping all of our shows updated there. Or if you'd like to carry the show with you, you can go to Apple Tunes or NPR One, search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and subscribe to the show, and it will be uploaded to your device to listen to whenever it's convenient. And if you are so technologically inclined, which I know my guest is, write a review about the show, because the more people who find us through the podcast, and the more we spread the word, and the more we get to share our message here. So Brianne Burkhart, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to talk about these very pertinent issues to my life.
Well, and let's give a little background for people who don't know you.
Okay.
I assume everyone does because I do. But I have known Brianne since she was 18 months old. Her mother, Dawn, and I have been friends before I was married, so 37 years or so we've been friends. I'm just 36 years. Crazy. So I've watched you grow up, which has been an honor. My daughter Kirsten and Brianne are the same age. They grew up together. Now Brianne is married and has two sons and lives in a beautiful home in Arroyo Grande that she's busy creating into a family paradise.
That's the goal. I don't know when we'll get there, but it's trying.
But also you're a yoga instructor. You are a nutrition guru.
I'm a massage therapist. I don't practice anymore, but yeah, I've got a couple. If I look back on my life, I have some really interesting gifts that I've been able to nurture throughout my life.
On top of building this family, that is your full-time job.
Yes, that is for sure my full-time job.
And so the reason I invite you in, this is not your first time on the show, but the reason I love having you on the show is because, one, we're two completely different generations, but you have such a great sense of what you're doing and what your goals and purposes are that I like to just hear what's happening from your perspective in the world of mothers and families at this time. What is the state of the union from your perspective?
I feel like, just like you said in the opening, everyone's kind of processing and dealing with life and the world and everything that's happening in their own ways. And I feel like as moms, as younger moms, we're feeling an overwhelming sense of responsibility to make the most of our time, make the most of our time with our kids, make the most of our times as individuals, make most of our times as wives or partners. And so those things add up. And I think now that we have the wonderful but also cursed tools of social media and things like that, there is a wealth of knowledge and information, but also a wealth of ability to compare yourself to the way that other people are doing things and second guess and question yourself on how you're doing things. And so currently, I see a lot of people trying to just juggle. And I think that's the same theme that you see any generation go through.
Absolutely.
And except I feel like the more progress we get as a world, the more expectation there is that we should be able to do it all. And that's just not possible. So I hate to say it, but it is not possible. Once you kind of surrender to the fact that, okay, I can't do it all, but let's choose the few things that are really, really important to me and that I'm passionate about, and then focus on doing those as best you can, a certain sense of relief comes, at least for me. And for me, realizing my priority was first my husband and I, and then came my kids. And I put it in that order because my husband and I's relationship is the priority, because we are the people that started this family, that started this little community, and are building this world in our little corner of Rio Grande. And so it's our responsibility to stay connected and stay on the same page and have the same goals, because like I said, everything's going to be coming at us, telling us what's important. And if my husband and I don't see that eye to eye, then there's not a lot of peace happening.
Well, and it's interesting because I think what you're grappling with is, like you said, almost universal. Every generation kind of has their how will we parent? How do we just best create a family? And it's been really kind of blowing up since the feminist movement. And I kind of go back to that era often because it was this divide that we had between very traditional stay-at-home mom, working dad roles to all bets are off, to where we are now, where actually in a growing segment of our population, we have full-time moms working moms who are the primary breadwinners, and more dads staying home. 8% of childcare is being done.
Some of my friends
are stay-at-home dads. So we have no normal, right? We have no traditional anymore that everyone can kind of look back on. I mean, even though the traditional was very limiting and repressing, there's almost something calming,
comforting.
About, yes, like, well, that's just the way it's done, even though it's not great. Now there are no rules, and it is blown up, and I think it creates a sense of chaos or conflict because no one knows what the normal is.
Yes, I totally agree, and I think that for me, I almost come. I'm an anomaly, I guess I would say, because my husband and I are high school sweethearts. When does that really happen these days?
It's almost considered taboo.
For sure. And that's what I was going to say, is that I'm an anomaly. I fit this mold of like modern young woman, but I also fit this mold of like very traditional housewife. I stay home and take care of the kids. My husband's the breadwinner. There's a couple things. I'm just a dichotomy in my own existence. So when it comes down to like comparing and looking at, there is no normal, that's where part of the overwhelming feelings come from, because the world is your oyster. Everything is possible. You can unschool your kids. You can homeschool your kids. You can travel the world with your children and sell everything and not be tethered to any community. So, and that's a lot of what's around me right now. I have a very interesting plethora of unique families that are around me. So I think the part is to really, you have to be in tune with what speaks to your truth. And that's hard to find your truth if you're looking outwards all the time. And so that's why also the relationship with your partner is vital. That's why I feel we're built as humans to have a partner in life, because they reflect and challenge and inspire you to find what your truth is and create that.
Well, and I also think what's challenging is because there is no precursor to parenting and being married, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have like a training that you do to do this. And then all of a sudden you're prepared and you take on the role. You know, it's one of the few things in life that you do with no training. You jump in and all of a sudden you're swimming and surviving at the same time. And I think what you talk about, that dichotomy or that split, is being felt in a lot of places, because from 1974 till 2010, the number of women who were working full-time steadily increased, and the amount of time children spend in daycare steadily increased. But from 2011 to 2017, for the first time, we've actually seen a bit of a shift to more women staying home and saying they plan to stay home than in 1974. It's not that number has, you know, spiked, but it's the first time it's shifted. So a lot of people, young women and men, are having this kind of momentary, are we on the right track? Like, has this change in our social structure of feeling like, you know, we need to work full time and have kids and have a house and have a husband really in our best interest? Because what your generation has seen is the, you know, highest rate of divorces in history as a result of everyone trying to do everything and be everything. Didn't work.
Yes.
We have women with heart disease at the same rate as men for the first time in history. You know, those stress-related diseases that were primarily seen in men, working men, we're seeing now in women at historic rates. And so the unintended consequence of everyone feeling the pressure to do everything, work full-time, raise a family, have a husband, is starting to crush people. And so you're in a great time to be a young mom, because you have the opportunity to create your own normal. But we don't, as I said, we don't have any launch pad of, we'll follow that plan. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we invite you to be part of the conversation. 805-781-3875. What is the state of your union today? How is your life as a parent or as a married person? How are you making it work? Or are you making it work? Are you feeling like you're just not quite able to keep up? And how do you kind of shut out all of the noise and competing information and research that's out there and find your truth, as Brianne has said? My guest is Brianne Burkhart. Our number is 805-781-3875. So when I called you and said, let's do the show, and I had said, let's, you know, talk about all of the conflicting information. Should we be a helicopter parent or a free range parent? And then you wrote back and said, I keep thinking about this thing about marriage and our priorities and keeping our husbands and our marriage as our primary goal is something I'm grappling with. And so I was so glad you brought that up, because it made me, it spoke to something that I've always thought about as a therapist, but we don't talk about it very much. And when I bring it up in my classes with my students, I can see the young girls, when I say, so, you know, what do you think about this being married and your partner being your primary person and your kids? Like, they look at me like I'm speaking a different language. For most of them, you know, the getting married part is so far down the road. They've been told you shouldn't be looking for your partner yet. You're too young to be serious with someone. They're also told that your career is the most important thing. And even when you have children, they'll go to daycare because your career is the most important thing. That the cultural story they're being told is completely at odds with what we know from research is in the best interest of children, families, and our mental health and well-being. So what do we do when the cultural story and what's in our best interest for our mental health collide? And so it made me think of this question, like, did you get married to be married to the person you are with, or did you get married to raise children?
Wow, that's a good question. I know that a number one concern for me when I was looking at who I was going to marry was, do I want you as the father of my kids? Mm-hmm. And if I couldn't see that happening, then it wouldn't have happened. Because I always wanted to be a mom at some point. And so that had to be on the same page. I really found in someone else a really strong desire for family. And that was important because I wanted that to be a priority. But ultimately, look, I've told my friends this before. I don't believe in soulmates in the sense that there's only one. I feel like you can have a lot of soulmates out in the world. there's so many people out in the world, that would be ridiculous for me to think that there's just one person out there for you. So it's who you choose, and you have to keep choosing each other every day to be, continue being each other's soulmate. And the biggest defining factor of why I chose my husband, if I really, really, really break it down, we were 19, we'd broken up for a portion of time, and we got back together and he said, let's go to counseling. And I was like, what? You're 19 years old and you want to go to counseling with me. Okay, you're someone that will fight for me. I need to have someone in my life because it's going to get hard. It's going to be challenging. And I want someone that's not going to bail. And someone that knows that there's resources out there to make us better and that we can do this together. And that was my deciding moment where I was like, okay, you're the person for me because I'm willing to do whatever it takes and you're willing to do whatever it takes.
But when you made the decision to get married, and I mean, and Chris was old-fashioned. He went to your dad
and
asked permission, and your dad was skeptical.
Very.
Very skeptical. Like, who are you, and why do you think you can support my daughter? So what did the two of you at this very young age actually think you were doing?
We thought that, look, we want to be in each other's lives for a long time, and we want to create a life together. And we were – this is where I kind of – am I not normal in the sense that we didn't wait to have the jobs and the money and the stability. We knew that we had an opportunity for a place of low rent. We knew that we had goals together, and we knew that it was going to be hard, and we were prepared for that. And we were like, well, it's going to be hard either way. Why not we do it together? And so we knew what we were getting into was uncharted territory. There was going to be a lot of growth happening. We were 21 when we got married, and it was definitely, but I look back now and those were like really golden, special moments. And I talk to my friends that are my age now that are still looking for whoever their partner's going to be. And they're like, well, but I really want to have this job and I really want to have this house. And I'm like, that's the fun part, figuring all that out together with your partner. That's, you know, that's part of the beauty of the struggle.
And I keep going back to this thing is, are we trying to avoid the struggle? Like, are people trying to get so set up so they don't have the struggles? Are people phobic because they've seen so many divorces that they're trying to make themselves Teflon so divorce won't happen? Because I think people have a misconception that divorce is like a disease you catch and you have no control over it, that all of a sudden we fell out of love and so we got divorced. And it's so not true. But again, it's where that clashing of the cultural story is one thing, but the actual reality is totally different. But the cultural story is really loud. You know, people hear stories that you need to be completely settled and mature and have your life organized and love yourself. I always say that too. Don't marry someone until you love yourself. And I'm a woman. I've been one all of my life. And the greatest struggle of being a woman in society is loving yourself. Mm-hmm. I still grapple with that. So if I had waited to fully love myself to marry my husband, I would still be single.
Oh, yeah.
So the cultural story of all of the things that have to happen before you can get married are unattainable in many ways. And then the other part is that it's absolutely zero guarantee that the marriage is easy. It doesn't matter if you get married at 21 or 41. When two people set up a partnership, you have conflict. Because the definition of conflict is two people with differing views about anything from how to put the toilet paper on the roll to where you're going to live.
And add parenting to that, right, to that scenario. And it's like multiplies your conflict times 10. I think, you know, a lot of people are sold this. You have to have all your ducks in a row before you commit to someone else fully. And my perspective is that, you know, no amount of traveling the world or finding yourself is going to grow you like committing to another person.
That's true.
And the vulnerability that you are able to tap into when you really are in a marriage and a committed one is unique to a relationship with a partner. And I think you tapped on something really, really important in the fact that people shy away from struggle and that we are, and I think that's what our parents told us because they don't want us to struggle. And Chris and I, my husband and I, have sat back and we've looked at our children and we both said, as hard as it's going to be, we want them to struggle because through those challenging experiences, they grow, they become who they're supposed to be. And we become who we're supposed to be. That's part of life. That's why we're here, to endure this journey and rise above and become our best selves that we possibly can be. It doesn't mean we're perfect. It just means that we know how to navigate a little bit easier because we've endured.
Mm-hmm. Or we haven't endured and we've fallen flat in our face. And that's the other piece, is that we also tell this kind of nice story that every time people struggle or fail, they'll end up victorious. And that also isn't true.
Yeah, it's not.
And I think that's also a disservice, is to tell this story that those who struggle somehow end up winning life. And they don't. I mean, there are a lot of stories of people who struggle their whole life. There is absolutely no guarantee that at any point in life that you're going to be the winner. And so the challenge is, how do I find the glory in those moments mm-hmm. of life when I'm overcome with natural disasters? Because even if our own lives were perfect in the moment, you'd have to be pretty cold-hearted to not feel the suffering of so many people around you. So again, it's a disservice to our children or to my clients to say, if you struggle and fail and struggle and fail, at some point you'll never feel pain again. And that's just not right.
No.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guest today is Brianne Burkhart, and we're kind of talking about the state of our unions, marriage, children, life, and how we deal with the conflicting information that's out there and try to do our best work. And we invite you to be part of the conversation at 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls. Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and our number is 805-781-3875. My guest is Brianne Burkhart. I've known Brianne since she was 18 months old, and now she's a beautiful 31, mm-hmm. married with two children. How old are the boys?
5 and 3.
So she's a busy gal.
We're in the thick of it.
Yeah, definitely in the thick of it. And the thing that's interesting, as I said before, when it comes to parenting, because you have no context for it, every year, every moment feels like the most important, intense. Nothing can be more insane than this moment. And so even though those of us who have parented down the road or are now grandparents will say, oh, 5 and 3, what a nice, easy time, right? Because we know what's ahead for you. But when you're in it at 5 and 3, it is everything. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, you know, all of the complexities of trying to raise a family, stay married, be a part of the community, hold on to a sense, a bit of yourself. And we invite you to share your thoughts on this. You know, how is your life going? Are you just so busy right now you can't even pick up the phone and call? Because I imagine for a lot of moms, this is, you know, if you have kids that are napping right now, which I know my daughter's daughter is napping, my granddaughter's napping, she's getting stuff done. She has that brief little window. But how are you keeping it all together? Are you keeping it together? Or are you feeling like, you know what, this is a great time. Marriage works easy. Kids are doing well. My job is great. I want to hear that too. Because I think as a therapist, I tend to only hear the stories of the people who struggle. The people who are doing well don't show up in my office. So if you're doing it right, I want to know. 805-781-3875. So I just want to tell you a brief story about my early experience being married and parenting. And so you and I are a little almost too much the same for a lot of people, because I've been with my husband, Chris. Our husbands are both Chris. I've been with him since I was 19. And so you and I have almost too much similar of an experience of, hey, in this seemed to be working out well. A lot of people, I think, had very different experiences with young marriages and young relationships that really were not developed enough to carry on. So I acknowledge that both you and I are anomalies.
Yes.
It's much more common to have young relationships horribly fail. But for a long time, for many years into raising children, I would only, and even as, when I was teaching, started teaching at Cal Poly, I would almost half jokingly say that I had children to have something to do while Chris was at work. And because I wanted to be a family and I wanted to raise kids, but I really wanted to be married to Chris. That's what I liked. We have so much fun together. I always said our life is like summer camp. And so the kids were a great thing to do. And then he would come home and then life would be fun again. Mm-hmm. But in 2005, now you're too young to remember this, but in 2005, a woman named Ailette Waldman wrote a New York Times essay and stated that she loved her husband more than she loved her four children. And that created just a social firestorm. People were completely outraged. And I think a lot of them read the headlines of the first paragraph, but didn't read further into her essay where she said, and this is a good thing because I'm modeling for my children the life I'd like them to live, which is to find a partner that they feel this in love with. And also it gives my children a stronger sense of security because they see that their parents' relationship is healthy and strong, and so they can relax and be kids. And that, from a therapeutic perspective, is absolutely true, that our children do best if they can just be kids. And when children feel like their parents' relationship is unstable or their parents are struggling, they sense it. They have dog sense or horse sense. And so children start to overcompensate and try to take care of their parents. Mm. So when I would do work with families, whenever a parent would say, oh, my son is so wonderful. He's always worried about me and rubbing my back and he's so compassionate. And I would think, no, that's not his job. Mm-hmm. He's clearly sensing that you're not okay and feeling he needs to compensate. So I looked back on what happened to Ailette Waldman because she was vilified. I mean, she was absolutely shunned by her community. People threatened to turn her into CPS for being a poor mother. She wasn't as much even treated as, you know, someone who had a controversial idea. And we talk about the state of civil discourse in our society now where we have a hard time having differing views. Well, this woman was treated like a heretic, like if she had spoken up against a religion. And so that kind of led into this whole idea that parenting has become much more than a role that we are living through raising our children, but a religion, that we have created a culture where parenthood is a religion. And if you don't participate in the religion on some level, you're going to be cast out by your peer group or shunned or vilified or considered a heretic like Ms. Waldman.
Yeah, and if you have anything that differs from the norm, then you are in danger of being told exactly how far off you are. And that's scary because that also discourages people from being real. Mm-hmm. Because we are all variations of normal. We are all on some spectrum in other views, perspectives, the way we act. And even when you were saying, you know, I totally relate to this woman who said, you know, I love my husband more than I love my kids. And in a sense, right? I relate to her in that sense, but I also feel like, you know, my husband's my priority and he has to be in order for this family to function. And it also makes me, when Chris and I first got married, we said, look, if there's problems, if we disagree, if we have arguments, I don't want to hide that from my kids, in a sense. Like, of course, if it's like a knockdown, drag out, like big issue, we wouldn't have that in front of the children. But I remember my parents would have big fights and then it would all calm down and then an hour or two later everything's fine and I didn't see any of the resolution. And so, like I said, we want our kids to struggle. We also want them to see that we struggle, that we are challenged, that we disagree sometimes, and this is how we navigate it. And it's not always perfect. And right. When it's not perfect, we will apologize and it's okay to be humble and say I was wrong.
Well, and it is that modeling the life you would hope your children will live someday.
Yes.
And that's, if I can't get parents to do the work for themselves, when I say to them, you're modeling for them the life you want them to choose. So if your relationship with your spouse isn't what you would like your kids to have, then change it.
Yes.
That's the motivation. 805-781-3875. Jorge, it's nice to have a man's take on this. Where are you today?
Oh, thank you. How are you?
We're good. What's on your mind?
Oh, my gosh. So I was listening to the show as going while I was shopping, and I'm mobile, hands-free. And so I'll give you the quick of it for your listeners. I am a 53-year-old retired special operations soldier and coach, and I married a 35-year-old dermatologist doctor.
Good
and
for you.
I am the stay-at-home dad. And we have her parents live in town in Santa Barbara, about a mile from us, and they're both retired doctors. And I can tell you, so many of the things on your show resonate with me. It's just, it's such a neat challenge, but role modeling, role modeling, role modeling.
Mm-hmm. How old are your children?
My daughter just turned one on the 30th of September, and our baby boy will be born in early December.
Congratulations. Oh, wow.
So is this what you expected life would be married with children? Is this what you envisioned? And how is it the same or different?
It's easier than I thought, but it's also way more joyful than I thought.
Tell me about the joyful part.
Any single day, you know, my daughter's ready to walk, had her first birthday. My mother got her a shopping cart, a little baby shopping cart for her birthday. Just the delight, my joy in seeing her happy and squeak and push around the little cart when she wants to walk so badly is everything.
So, Jorge, did you hear the statement that I read about loving your spouse more than your children?
I did.
So where did you fall in that comment? What did you think?
I think that it was a great comment. So I have a good friend, Kristen Rutz, who's a Christian woman from Westmont University College, and she counseled me to have very high integrity about our relationship before the child, mm-hmm. and that we really need to work on our stability, our issues. But I also heard the part where the conflict resolution of when you argue, to be able to also give your children a chance to see that you apologize or you can own your own space. And I really like that.
Mm-hmm. And I do. I think that is an important piece because, again, the whole thing, as you said, is modeling, modeling. We're trying to live the life we want for our children. And so as a stay-at-home dad at 53, do you feel, I don't know what your, you know, your community of friends is like, but do you feel any judgment coming your way or do you feel it's completely embraced you? You know, how has it been to kind of be the anomaly in your social group?
I have been really welcomed. Our community has been awesome. And our little neighborhood, it's crazy. We're all talking about what's in the water. Because our neighbors have a child that's 18 months old and they're expecting. Across the street, they have a 20-month-old and they're expecting in 2 months. And going shopping, going to Trader Joe's, people are so sweet to me.
Do you meet other stay-at-home dads or are you one of the lone wolves?
I've only met one, and he's a guy named Smitty he's 50 and he just had twins. And he has 11-month-old identical twin girls.
Oh, my
goodness. So there's only one other person that I know that's remotely close.
Well, Jorge, I appreciate you calling in, and I can hear the joy in your voice. So I just hope it continues, and I'm hoping that you can stay present and just experience every moment with your kids all the way through from here on out.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I have to tell you, I feel like we've really got it going on, but I also had a couple takeaways of just listening to your show. So very good for you. And thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in, Jorge. So there you go. As we said, there is no normal anymore, that people are having to work to create their new normal. But I wonder if as a culture, we're more accepting of a stay-at-home dad and maybe the quirky way he'll raise the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more leeway for dads right, child-rearing practices than it is for women. I just feel like we're much harder on each other in the competition, the expectations of how mothers are.
Well, yes, on that side, I have a friend who is a stay-at-home dad and his wife works. And I do think that when it's outside of what we're typically used to seeing, people are all about accepting that. But if it was me and all my other friends are working mothers, there is a little bit of competition, I guess, could be a word, but maybe a little bit of resentment too towards each other, because as a stay-at-home mom, oh, I wish I could get out of the house more. As a working mom, oh, I wish I could be in the house more. You always think that the grass is greener on the other side. I almost wanted to pick Jorge's brain and just say, like, okay, so how do you feel as far as, do you miss being able to have your own identity? How do you feel like it's going to go a few years from now when the kids are older and they're in school? Like, is this becoming who you are? Mm-hmm. And I think that would be the same probably for a stay-at-home mom as well. It's a very interesting thing to be able to pick someone's brain that's in this different stage of life, you know, having fun doing it.
Well, and I wonder if there is, you know, when you're 53, as opposed to having
perspective,
right? You had the opportunity to look back and say, oh, my goodness. And the other thing that I realize is that when you have a child at 25, you only have 25 years behind you. So when you think of 20 years of raising a child, right, that's almost your entire lifetime. You think, oh, my gosh, 20 years. I'm never going to be the same. But when you're 56 like I am and you look at 20 years, that was over in a flash.
Right.
And I wish there was some way to translate that to young moms. And it's really not even 20 years. You know, by 16 and they're driving and kind of on their own. So if you looked at 16 years over the course of a 90-year lifetime, it's really a blink of the eye that you would be spending. But we've made it seem like taking the time to raise your child is taking away from your entire life.
That's a gigantic sacrifice.
Right. We call it a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And so that's unfortunate, because it is from a grandmother's perspective. That time is very, very short. And I guess for Jorge at 53, he knows that.
A lot of people, because my husband travels so much, are like, oh, poor you. You have to be at home with the kids and in the trenches and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, but poor him. He misses out on so much support and family time and memories. So I think, like you said, it's perspective. Even just having a 3 and a 5-year-old, I see how quick it goes. My oldest just went into kindergarten. So I'm like, whoa, that happened like a flash, and he's going to be driving in a flash. And so how do I make the
most his self-driving car,
right? How do I make the most of this time with them and but still not lose my mind? Because, and it is that balance that it's so hard to keep, because I want to be present and I want to be my best self when I'm with them and enjoy the most of this time, but also I can't spend all my time with them because I lose me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny because it's come up a little bit between calls you've been mentioning, and I don't want to dismiss it, the idea of keeping my identity or finding this thing that's for me. Mm-hmm. And again, I think there's a little bit of the cultural story conflicting with reality.
Yes.
That once you have a child, the you that used to exist is never there again. And somehow we tell young women and young men that you can have a child, put them in childcare, and go back to your life the way it used to be, but it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So there is this like transitional identity period or crisis that we go through to re-identify or recreate who we are in the role of mother and wife and child. And what does that look like? And I don't know, you know, I don't know if there's like a whole separate identity. I think that there's time for personal fun. I don't know how to put it, like, or time that we concentrate on things we're interested in. But this idea or this pressure that we have to also retain a whole sense of our own identity, who we are, like that is, there isn't a separate identity. It's all mixed in together, right? If you think about it, your role as a daughter, your role as a friend, your role as a wife, like all the roles we play are our identity. It's just in different contexts. And so I think this idea that there's this separate identity that's apart from all these other places, it's not there. I think it's just finding the respite from the motherhood role, which is 24/7 and draining. And I think that's why moms feel this craving. I need something that's separate and for myself. And how do we find that balance? And we've been told that it's, we'll get a full-time job. And that somehow fills it. But then we go back to the whole cultural story of, then we over-identify with our job as being the most important thing in our life.
Or we start a blog. Or we start, seriously. Okay. Or there's so many moms that are my friends that that's how they have their outlet.
Yeah,
through a blog. And then it also becomes a job because you get sponsored and you have money coming in that way. Or you start a workout job where you're like a coach, and there's all these multi-level marketing businesses. There's so many resources for women now to still identify as themselves, but as a mom also. But the other thing too that you were saying, you said, you know, you transform when you become a mom and you think, oh, I'm going to go back to being my old identity. That's the mental transformation, but also the physical. You're never going to be the same physically, you know, like when you have a baby.
And although, unfortunately, if you look at celebrity magazines, see, yes, they continue this fantasy that you do go back to, you know, a size zero, because you see the pictures of these women post birth, which is a huge disservice. But go ahead.
No, it is a huge disservice. And that's what we're being sold. Mm-hmm. And so I think that in order to be our best selves, and I say best, not perfect, right? In order to be our highest self, I guess would be the right word, and to embrace all these different facets of who we are, we have to be okay being depressed sometimes. We have to be okay being strung, like just strung out and tired sometimes, because when we reach our limits is when we are willing to change and grow. And so that's the same with a relationship too. Like, my husband and I become the priority because naturally it forces you to become each other's priority. When things aren't in harmony, it's so challenging, and that becomes very evident, and nothing works. If you two aren't working, nothing else is working. So that's going to make known that, hey, you need to pay attention to this. Your body, if you're not paying attention to your body, if you're not paying attention to what you're eating, what you're putting inside, how you're caring for yourself, that self-care, your body's going to start talking to you and telling you, hey, you need to pay attention. And so being aware and listening and being patient enough to listen is one of the biggest lessons I've learned this whole journey of being a mom is, and a wife, is like, I have to listen. And I can't just be stubborn and think I can push through and barrel through, because we're taught at a young age that we have to like continue to push through any boundaries and just keep achieve. And we're human. That's not possible.
Well, and one of the things we've lost in our culture is the time to just be. Right, we become very doing, and I always poke at Cal Poly for having the school motto be "Learn by doing," and everything's about doing. We're always accomplishing and achieving, but a great balance of that is the time where we're just being, and we're quiet, and we're calming down. And that's where we see with the Las Vegas shooting and all of the natural destruction, you know, that's happened in the world. These catastrophic events, our nervous systems are on overload, and they can't keep functioning at that high pace without downtime. And so to steal that downtime, and then unfortunately with technology, and we think we're calming down by scrolling through our phones, but it actually activates, right, the cerebral cortex. It keeps us more amped up. And so the challenge becomes greater to, how do we slow down? How do we just be together? And when it comes to kind of the topic of our show today was about prioritizing our marriage in some ways over our family, keeping that as the priority. It's not socially popular. There's been a lot of research. I was pulling up articles about new millennial marriages, a lot of couples coming together strictly for the reason of raising children together in more of a partnership than even thinking of the romantic or the lifelong commitment. There's a lot of cynical young people that feel like the whole idea of long-term marriage is passé. And it's unfortunate because we are social creatures. We do better in partnership than solo. And so I think that this idea of, how do we prioritize our marriage? How do we slow down enough to give time for the marriage to be nurtured, right? To to make love instead of having sex, which are two different things. A lot of couples just stop being intimate with each other. And when we're intimate with each other, it releases oxytocin and dopamine and serotonin. Those are bonding hormones that keep you feeling close to each other. And if we get too tired and too busy because we're child-centered and we believe the world revolves around our children, and we let go of the intimacy because we're too tired, then we wonder why our relationship falters. It's like the whole speed of life is counter to what we need to feel human.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was beautifully said, by the way. But I'm like, yes, preach. I agree with everything you're saying, but I feel like it's interesting because I made a conscious decision with my oldest child. Like, I'm going to do one sport this year. One sport. He's five. I'm going to take it time, and we're not going to schedule anything for this Saturday. A lot of people do birthday parties, sports, all these other things. And I find myself getting overwhelmed and not being my best self when I'm trying to manage all of these other activities and things and experiences. And so for my husband and I, my family and I, it is vitally important that for us, in order to slow down, we have to get outside. We have to go be in nature. We have to go travel. We have to go and travel, meaning you don't have to have a lot of money and go fly somewhere.
Camping.
You can camp. Oh, yeah. You can take your van. You can go set up a tent and go have some time together away from the world, away from everything else that's going on. And relationships are important. Friendships are important. But ultimately, this is a precious, sacred time that we have together as a family unit. So how are we going to protect it? And I feel like everything around fundraiser schools, whatever, everything is going to be keeping pulling us to be involved, to get outside of ourselves, do this, do that. And it is good to be a part of a community, but ultimately the most important role in my eyes is being close as a family unit.
Well, and also if you look at the trajectory or longevity of human life today, if we're going to live into our 90s and you want to stay with that partner you started with in your 20s or 30s or whenever you got married, in 53 when you had your children, they're gone in 20 years. That is the reality. And so many couples, you know, the highest rate of divorce at this moment are empty nesters.
Yes.
Of my generation who might have missed the divorce boom earlier but are getting post-children. And we've had a child-centric parent model for the last 25 years, and these couples are finding that the fallout post child-centric child rearing is that you have no relationship with your partner. And so that's the other thing we're grappling with socially, is that we need to encourage people to really think about those long-term commitments. What does life look like post child? Brianne, thank you for coming in today and being my guest.
Thank you for having me.
You have to come in often because I love your perspective and what you bring to the show.
Anytime.
And this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Previous shows are at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. You can podcast the show at Apple Podcasts and download and listen at your convenience. You can contact me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or like our Facebook page. And I'd like to leave you with a little more Tom Petty as we remember him. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX.
Good night, baby, sleep tight, my love. May God watch over you from above. Tomorrow I'm working, what would I do? I'd be lost and lonely if not for you. So close your eyes, we're all right for now. I've spent my life traveling, spent my life free.
I could not repay all you've done for me. So sleep tight, baby, unfurrow your brow, and know I love you.